son. Where'd you find this?
Buckle up, Buttercups. It's time to get down to business. It's the Totally Legitimate Business Podcast. Totally legit.
Oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. It's a Totally Legitimate Business Podcast. We're back here, and this is a redemption episode. This is a redemption episode. We had a whole good episode, and because of some terrible audio, we're being forced to do the makeup. But I want to welcome Nick Sessions to the show. Applause.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me. And last week was a warm-up. It's fine. You know, we got it. We're all limbered up.
Dry run.
Uh-huh. Now everyone's ready for anything that could possibly happen.
So I'm interested to know, and I guess maybe this is probably a little too early, but I'm interested to know how you feel more prepared. Like, what? I feel like you covered a lot of bases, but was there certain information that you didn't feel like you covered during the last convo?
Oh, absolutely. There's always, even when I make videos now, there's a million things where it's like, oh, I wish I'd have talked about that.
Yeah.
But also, I mean, you know, everything that I was doing was very new. So there was like things that kind of had in the works that I was trying to, you know, reach out to people to do. And I was just like, oh, I can't really talk about anything right now. But now there's more stuff to talk about. There's all kinds of fun things happening. So
nice. Awesome.
Yes, sir.
Well, okay, so let's kind of step back here. For the second time, why don't you tell the people about the page that you started, the interest that you have, and the rabbit holes you get lost down when researching old-time radio shows and the history of multimedia.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Well, I first got interested in CBS Radio Mystery Theater when I was working on a musical project with a friend, and they just kept splicing in these clips of what, you know, who I now know as E.G. Marshall, Upson Pratt from Creepshow, and of course from General Hospital, the man himself, but just presenting a show, just, and now Mystery Theater, and it just sounded amazing, and I was like, what is this? And
he
was just
more.
Like, yeah, he's like, it's this old show. And then between then and the next time we got together, I just devoured everyone that I could get my hands on. And when I came back, I was like, this show is incredible. And I started talking to him about episodes. He's like, I've never listened to one in my entire life. So you know, then I just became obsessed with something that nobody else was listening to. Attack me. But
sabotaged by the cat.
The cat is a son of a bitch. Everything that I try, everything that I work for, everything that I've ever loved. But no, it just ended up being one of those things that, for the large part, I got really obsessed with something that I didn't really know anybody that was listening to. And I've gotten a lot more friends now that I listen to them with. My wife and I listen to them all the time, but there's no one who's actually going and giving a context to old radio shows in the same way where you can go and there's, you know, hundreds and thousands of people doing reviews of horror movies and talking about which directors did what. There's no one talking about the old horror radio plays and, you know, who was directing what, who was writing. And it's just an interesting hole to dive down and just see what all is back there. Cause I mean, there's countless hours of shows that you can find on, I mean, anywhere. Mysteryshows.com is a huge one, but also the internet database. There's, I mean, you could pick any given series and probably lose at least a week of your life. You know?
Yeah. Well, and it's one of those things too, where it's like, you know, there's always a backstory. And it's so strange. Like, you know, most people today know the stars that we know, and we might know some slightly older movie stars, but very few people know radio personalities. You know, very few people even could tell you, you know, silent film stars. No one's talking about that. So radio is this kind of like much like long forgotten, but at that time where it was the only thing, it was, you know, they were the movie stars I've always just wondered, like, what drama occurred in CBS studios or NBC studios? Like, all these people, just like any bunch of creatives, just on this floor, fueled up on cocaine and coffee, mm-hmm. and just like writing all the shows that everyone's listening to, because the radio, that was it. Everyone only had a radio, and that was it. There was four radio stations, you know.
Right, right. And, you know, just all the drama that would take place, even, like, you know, back and forth between people producing shows who they're interested yeah. in making a story, and then the people who are sponsoring the show, who they're like, we are trying to sell coffee, man. Yeah. You yeah, can't seriously. Say this on the radio. Yeah. And they're like, well, but, you know, we could really sell you some coffee if you just let this lady scream as loud as she can into that microphone.
Yeah, right, exactly. It's just, I don't know. It's just always like, I know that it's there. And, yeah. and it, you know, I think the closest we get to it today is maybe hearing people talk about what it's like to be a cast member on SNL. It's like the closest right. thing that we could get to that kind of vibe. But
yeah. And it's a really weird thing to research too, because, you know, so many of those people that actually have that knowledge now, it's all the old guard. So when you're looking this up online, you know, as soon as you get to a website that looks like GeoCities, you're
in the right spot.
I made it. I've arrived. Okay, this is it. And then you send an email going, this website, I don't think anybody's. Oh, wait, never mind. There yeah. they are.
At Thank AOL, you, Brad. At AOL.com. Awesome yeah,
exactly. And they are like the sweetest people. And it's really cool because it's a community of people that are kind of in the same boat where they might have one or two friends, but they're just like, there's somebody else listening to this. Like, you know, yeah. so everybody's just genuinely excited to share, you know, shows and experiences and all that stuff.
I guess what's like, okay, so you've been going down this rabbit hole. What's the weirdest? Like, what's the weirdest radio show that you stumbled across?
There's one that's like Chet Cheddar's and Tales from the Morgue, I think. And it's
Chet
like
Cheddar's Chet yeah. Cheddar's.
And it's like a real hick type character who I believe it always starts with him like hauling manure. But I mean, it's like a real played up like Bubba accent yeah. where he's just like, here I am out here hauling manure and oh, here comes an alien. Yeah, and it's right, just
exactly.
And the humor's about that dead on. I've listened to them all a long time ago, and I'm going to do it again because I want to reabsorb it. But it's one of those things where it's like, it's funny cause it's not, but you know, it's also probably a time and a place. So again, like taking like I want to do more research to see, you know, who made it at that time
yeah,
and what
yeah,
was going sure. on. I have my guesses, but you know.
it's very funny to me. Like, how the internet enables the nichest of niche motherfuckers to get together.
Like, yeah, it's really funny.
I love it. It's probably my favorite thing about the internet, even beyond limitless access to information. It's connecting niche motherfuckers with other niche motherfuckers.
That's right.
I don't know. I feel like I haven't met anyone from this community, but I feel like I already know people from this community.
Yes, yes. And you'd love them all. You'd love them
all. So, okay, so like when you're, so I know there's like a ton of documentation on like the beginning of Hollywood and like the scandal and shittery occurring around Hollywood. I'm just wondering, have any books ever been written ever about this, like even in the 80s or the 60s, like somebody writing a book about 1920s radio hour at NBC and like what that culture was like?
I know that there are, and I have not dived down that rabbit hole yet. I really need to, because I mean, that's the backbone of it. I've been trying to just absorb it from like the tiny little bits of what I can get around, you know, the little like pocket of history around each production that's going on, you know, where they were at. But I do want to go through and actually read something that is, you know, what would you call that? a chronological account of everything that happened to kind of slide in all those pieces.
Well, and it's gotta exist. But it's also one of those things. It's like, you don't start there.
Yeah.
That's a place where you find yourself when you're like, okay, I've read all the 1994 GeoCities websites. I've read them all. I need more information. Now I need to go to the library, you know.
I've emailed all the webmasters.
Right. They told me to read these books. Because I would really just be super interested just to see like what, because again, like they were the movie stars of the time, like Orson Welles. Like he was an international sensation because there were four radio stations and he was putting on all these like, you know, super riveting productions.
Oh yeah, yeah.
It's
Mercury Theater of the Air.
Yeah, it's really kind of crazy, like the profound impact. And he also went on to like have a profound impact on film. He firmly understood the power of mass media, but
The Citizen Kane and was Touch of Evil, I think, was the other like film noir that he did was really good.
Yeah, he understood. He got it. He got it for sure. And I don't know. It's one of those things like an equivalent I would make is like the people who started on radio, they understood film better than film people did. Just like the people who filmed in black and white understood film better than any person who filmed with color after color became the thing. I don't know. It's like the radio guys were the ninjas, and as multimedia expanded, they kind of steered the ship. But until images got brought into the picture.
Yeah, well, it's an avenue that pushes you to do more with less. You know, you have to think about how you convey, just physical actions happening in, you know, a narrative. And sometimes it's really clumsy and it's just like, well, it's falling out of my pocket and now you've got it. And oh my God. And other times they find ways to do it and you're like, oh man, like I actually have to go back and re-listen to that to just, that was that seamless. And they did something that by nature is very unsubtle, you know, just being like, hey, this is happening, but they pulled it off, you know.
It's
a lot of both.
no, for sure. I feel like for a while I was doing like audiobooks, but it was like production, it was like radio shows, so I'd add sound effects and you know, make it like a little audio production. I think that it, one of the funniest things about it always has been the narrating, like you were just describing. You can't see the thing, so either you have to make it a very obnoxious and easily understandable audio cue that the audience could hear and immediately know what that means, or you have to explain what you're doing, even though in real life you'd never be like, oh my God, I'm falling over here, and oh my gosh, I've touched your butt, and oh my God, I took your wallet out, and oh my God, I took the money out of the wallet. You know what I mean? Like, you'd never do that. I don't know. It's a cute little element of that type of media that I always, I don't know. It's hilarious.
It's fun.
It's cute.
Yeah, it's adorable. But you know, like you were saying with Orson Welles, I think he was slowly finding ways to break out of that. And even, you know, with the War of the Worlds, that the most, you know, I guess it's probably the most infamous, you know, radio show that ever happened. Sure. But that one, I mean, even just the idea of telling a story, you know, adapting an H.G. Wells novel, but telling it with a story of fake news broadcasts rather than, you know, having like, you know, just characters talking or, you know, real character development. It's just all of these, that type of storytelling in itself was pretty interesting and new, and also really confusing if you tune in after the beginning with no context of what's going on. Because as it turns out, on that night, you know, October 30th, 1938, Mischief Night, James. There, the biggest show
perfect
on the radio. Oh yeah, the biggest show on the radio was Edward Bergen and Charlie McCarthy. and that's a ventriloquist act. So there was a ventriloquist act on the air, and that was the biggest draw. And when they went on break from doing their act, it goes to a little musical interlude. And as that musical interlude happens, tens of millions of Americans start fiddling with their dial, and they end up on Mercury Theater of the Air, which was scheduled opposite of this show. They come in halfway through the broadcast, and they just hear this, you know, army general talking about this ship. There's a giant explosion, and they, you know, everybody just believes that they've been attacked by aliens from another world. But what's really happening is on the 20th floor of the Mercury Theater in New York, Orson Welles is just holding up his hands and keeping a symphony of 19 people and 10 actors at bay until he finally lets them, you know, go through with the rest of the script. So it's almost like a them hearing that and that dead silence and going, is these people just really died? Like, that type of immersive storytelling is amazing, but also is kind of an accident that it was effective as it was.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Or, you know, but I think there's also people that are just like, oh, he did it on purpose. And I don't know.
Well, I mean, I think it has to be, it has to be a thought that somebody had at some point.
Yeah.
Like, what if people think this is real?
Yeah.
But it is just funny to think that things could get so easily misconstrued back then. Like just by simply not tuning into the radio station early enough, you'd think that the world is being invaded by aliens and kill your neighbor. You know what I mean?
Wild times.
Speaking of killing your neighbor, do you have Netflix? Are you a Netflix person?
Yes.
Did you watch Leave the World Behind?
No, I have not.
It's the movie. What was that about? It's the movie produced by the Obamas. It just got released on Friday. It's a fictional tale, but dude, it's fucked. You have to watch it.
Let me ask you, how many times have you watched it?
I just watched it one time. It came out Friday. I watched it. I watched it once. It's really good. And it's a hilarious on the subject of like, did he know? Did they know? Did they know something? I've always been of the mindset that, especially War of the Worlds, like after they witnessed that, but even before that, they understood the power of radio and mass media, and. It's hard for me to think even something like War of the Worlds. There wasn't a single person who was like, what if people freak out? But that to them would have been an amazing thing. Like, you got to think about, especially this scenario, like this is like the most cutting edge. This is the edgiest movie. It's the most insane horror film ever created before horror films were a thing, you know? It's made the news. It's like national news that I don't know. It's just an interesting analysis at how we'll just believe whatever. Especially like before there's image, like how simple it was. She's like, oh my gosh, this is the case, and everyone would just be like, oh no, I guess this is real.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even then, like with all the things that the CIA has pulled off and admitted to, they're just kind of like college pranks, or at least that's what they sound like. I mean, it's more believable that someone would have tried to cause mass hysteria with a radio show than, you know, the CIA pretending to be vampires in the Philippines.
Well, I feel like, yeah, the radio is like the no brainer. Like, of course that would have been a social experiment conducted at some point. But I do want to unpack the vampires in the Philippines, because I've been watching more about it, and it just gets weirder and weirder. And I'm not necessarily saying I think there are vampires, but I feel a certain way about like enough humans believing something. Like, does that,
you feel like there's something out there in that jungle?
Can it make it real? Like, you know what I mean? Can it will it into existence? Or again, like if there's a bat that's 6 feet tall, like maybe it's not a vampire, but you know, there's just like beings out there that you don't. But anyways, I definitely want you to unpack that one again because it's such a strange tale.
It's fun. Okay. Oh, right now. Yeah, I'm sorry. No, I thought you were gonna go. Okay, so in World War II, when the Philippines were occupied by Japan, the Japanese, basically, they were talking to the higher-up politicians in the Philippines at the time, and those politicians were essentially helping them destroy their own people in exchange for, like, better treatment during and after the war of the Japanese one. The Americans came over and were like, hey, we'll get the Japanese out of here, and the politicians who were kind of playing all sides to the middle were just like, oh yeah, that'd be great. And then the Japanese were out of there, and then the Americans left these corrupt politicians in charge. And of course, the people of the Philippines, they did not take well.
Yeah, they didn't appreciate that idea. They didn't like that at all.
No, not a bit. So then the Huk army, I believe they were pre-existing to this, but then that's what it was. The Huk were out trying to take down the government, and so the CIA sent in Edward Lansdale. And this man, I guess he had some knowledge of the culture of the island, and he knew that they had this like belief since the 16th century in the Aswang, which are the Philippines' version of a vampire. And they kind of, there's all different versions of them, but a lot of them have a proboscis tongue. Well, I think that's the right word, like the trunk of an elephant. And they suck babies out of wombs.
Damn. Baby vacuums. So, damn.
Yeah, dude. So basically, they're like super mean, you know, just all the time. But he knew that they believed, you know, This was like a very deeply held belief in this culture. So Edward Lansdale's just like, guys, let's just make them think that vampires are out on the mountainside. And that's what they do. They sent in some people into the village to talk to them. And they started spreading the word that, you know, they saw some Aswang on the mountainside, or they think they did. And then they waited a couple days for that word to get to the Huk fighters, and then they sent in a team of people, and while the Huk were on patrol, they snuck up to the person at the back of the group. They took him out, punctured his neck, drained the blood from him, and then threw him back on to the trail. So they just found this guy with his blood drained, and they surrendered. And
it's amazing. That is an amazing tale.
Edward Lansdale's a rascal.
Yeah, he doesn't look like a lot of fun, I'm not going to lie. I remember us looking up his picture and thinking the exact same thing. Like, this guy is the squarest of square.
You know what? But also, like, look at that picture again. And when you think about it, you're like, he doesn't look like a lot of fun. Everyone in his office thought that about him. And then that dude walks into a board meeting and is like, guess what? Vampire prank. Y'all thought it wasn't fun? You were so wrong. You're dead wrong, man. About to get batty.
Oh, Lansdale, you rascal.
That's right.
It's fucking hysterical. Yeah.
Lansdale's a legend. Yeah, he did it again.
Exactly, exactly. Lansdale. I just think... I truly think a lot of crazy fun has been had with psychological operations on the radio, especially like when they were trying to figure this shit out. I mean, like, I don't know if you've heard the stories of like the war, but like the propaganda, the American propaganda against the Nazis during the war, hijacking radio stations, creating like bogus pamphlets about Hitler having syphilis and all this shit. Just like the shit that was really like where they were trying to refine, you know, sharpen their blade. I can only imagine like a bunch of, you're totally right. Like a fucking boardroom of these people. And one of these squares is like, guys, we got to think outside the box. Guys,
we got to
think outside the box. What if we just made a bunch of shit up?
throw some spaghetti at a wall, see what sticks.
Yeah, seriously.
But to your point about, you know, the propaganda that was happening at the time, like, it's a pretty regular thing that, you know, like, a lot of, you know, like, the heyday of radio happened, you know, in that McCarthyism Red Scare,
right,
you know, area where we got, like, the Hollywood blacklist and all of that from. But any time that you're researching writers from podcasts or podcasts from, you know, radio programs at the time, it's so frequent that you'll see that they were also writing propaganda, you know, and even like John Dixon Carr was guys like famous for Locked Room Mysteries. He wrote some episodes of Suspense, also had his own series Cabin B-13 and hosted Murder by Experts. He was born in Pennsylvania, but lived most of his life in England. So he's largely considered an English mystery novelist. But, you know, he also wrote, you know, propaganda scripts for BBC.
Damn, yeah.
During that time.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely makes sense.
Very regular thing.
Yeah, it definitely makes sense. Definitely the cross collaboration or the influence of one in the others has always been super strong. You know, I just feel it's radio was such an interesting one in the sense that, you know, before that there was just newspapers or books, and radio was the first thing that like allowed you to get a message to a lot of people super duper fast. I truly wonder like how much of it was growing pains, like truly accidental, like, oh, we didn't expect that to happen. And how much of it was like a completely a social engineering experiment just to be like, we gotta see what we gotta put this out there and see how people react. So we know, you know.
Well, and I mean, in that line of thinking too, like when you're talking about, you know, newspapers, books, all of that, you know, if you're doing a social experiment, you're trying to think of the way that, like, you know, mass word can be more manipulative, like adding the human factor into it, adding in emotions, being able to convey emotions, to elicit emotions from other people. That's, you know, I mean, that is all psychological warfare.
Yeah.
So, you know, actually being able to have a human voice and that tone, I mean, it obviously makes a message carry farther, I would think, you know.
Yeah, it's just, it's so interesting. It's so interesting how that's developed and what it's kind of like devolved into. But like, okay, so what this, how did you get into this because, you know, you're working on a music project and one of your buddies points you in the direction. But really, you as a certain kind of person who reads the fucking liner notes. So this isn't the first thing. Is horror movies like I guess the heyday of horror movies, as we would call it, like 70s, 80s, is that what really got you into appreciating the liner notes, is what I'm asking?
Oh yeah, absolutely. When we met in like elementary school, that was pretty much all I was talking about. And you were the same way about music. You could tell me, you know, who was involved in producing an album. And I was like, what does it mean to produce an album? You know? And then on the other side, I'm just like the assistant director. And you're like, Nick, what are you, you know, but it's like, it's really, I don't know. There was just always that, interest in, at some point, just, you love something so much that you're just like,
I need how to did know they, everything like, about it.
Yeah. Yeah. You just, you want to know the entire story of, you know, how they got there and, you know, just how this whole thing took place. But yeah, I think probably just like the story that making the original Night of the Living Dead was one of those that really piqued my interest in that too, because I mean, at that time, you know, they're George Romero's company with John Russo, Image 10 in Pennsylvania, they were, they'd filmed some episodes of the Mr. Rogers Show and yeah. And they were filming beer commercials on the weekend and then through the week going out to this abandoned farmhouse that had no running water or power to shoot this movie. And, you know, I mean, they were like even a lot of the people that are involved in it are like the guy who plays Harry Cooper, he's one of the producers. Like, you know, there were people that were kind of like, all right, well, I'll act if you need somebody to act.
Yeah, right.
To
right,
make right. this happen. And it's kind of like that. It's cool to see that that was like an all hands on deck kind of experience. And it's interesting to see where everybody was at the time and just to see what the perception of it now is versus how it was when it you came know out. right
yeah. And it's interesting to think, like, you know, I don't know if that's the first piece of zombie content, but it's probably the most iconic. It was the one that, you know, I would say most people would say that entire subgenre evolved from.
Right. The modern zombie as it's viewed now. You know, that's yeah. Yeah. Right. George Romero got... Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was just going to say George Romero got his real inspiration for how they moved from the movie The Last Man on Earth with Vincent Price. It's based on the Richard Matheson story, I Am Legend. Mm-hmm. And they're vampires in that one, but the way they move and all of that is really, really similar. It's a public domain movie too, so you can pull it up and watch it anytime, but it's pretty cool to see, you know, what he took from that and honestly made it into a fresh and cool idea, which is fun because Richard Matheson, he was just like, I feel like you did a worse job, you know, dude. And it's like, well, which one are we still talking about, Richard? And I love you, but you know what I mean? Great writer, but just let the man have his moment, you know.
And are there any folks who make horror movies or any of the big names from before, were they into old time radio? Is there like a lot of overlap there? Did those people like call back to what did those kids, how you see what I mean? Like, what happened to George Romero in his life? What things did he come across that made him do the things that he did?
Who did this to him?
Yeah, right. How did this happen?
I don't know. I've never specifically heard anybody talking about those is an influence. But I mean, I'm sure that there have to be, but I haven't personally come across any of those yet. I was listening to one where they were talking about, it was an interview with Hyman Brown, who was the producer and director of CBS Radio Mystery Theater, but he did over like 30,000 television and radio shows.
Damn.
He is prolific. And he passed away at age 99. And his granddaughter, Melina Brown, said that he was working on stories every day until the day he passed away, writing them out shorthand. I mean, he was like, we're making stuff. Like, we're up, we're going.
Yeah.
He had, oh man, I totally gave that long explanation and then my thought just derailed like a minecart in Donkey Kong. It was terrible. I don't remember where I started. It could have been anything.
So this guy, he was writing, he wrote 30,000 TV shows, he's a prolific writer. Is there any overlap between horror movie creators and radio shows?
Thank you. So yeah, that's where I was going with that. He's a very prolific writer, and he was talking about in this interview how they had young actors that were coming in who had never actually stood behind a microphone before that were all on TV, and he was specifically talking about Fred Gwynne, who the guy who played Herman Munster. And I mean, so just like thinking about it from that perspective, like you know, that dude at that time was like, radio was kind of that past. I mean, and he's talking about them coming to do CBS Radio Mystery Theater. So like 72 on, you know, not back in the 30s and 40s. But
yeah,
by that time, you know, Fred Gwynne had been in Hollywood, never had to do radio. And he was like, wow, this is new. So, you know, I mean, it was already kind of a fading thing. Or, I mean, you know, it never went anywhere, but you know, radio drama had already kind of fizzled out, you know. So, right. So I think it it's probably somebody's influences, but they're probably a lot less recent.
Yeah, no, sure. If anything, it would be the directors from the 60s, 70s, and 80s. They would have been kids or younger when they would have been a more abundant chance to hear radio show. Like, it used to be a very popular thing. Radio, I mean, even like you're saying, like well into the 70s, especially in the BBC, like BBC, I'm pretty sure they still have radio shows. They probably all migrated to podcast format shit now, but
right.
BBC had radio shows, you know, forever. They never stopped doing that. But it's just crazy to think that, you know, we were so quick to move on there, but I don't know. It's definitely a lost art. I was telling you this last time, but at some point in college, I was interning at a public radio station, and we had to record and broadcast a guy doing. He did a one man show, and then he did the sound effects for another person. It was actually awesome. It was this Native woman from the middle of fucking nowhere, Nebraska, but she had like a whole radio show. She did all the voices and he did all the sound effects. It was awesome. It was a cool production.
That's killer.
But just watching him work the box, he had like this rolly cart, and all the Foley sound effects guys did. They had this huge cart and had all these different things on it, and you know, combine all these different noises to get the certain footsteps. Here's footsteps. Oh, opening a door. Like it's a little door. You open it, you close it. I don't know. There's just like something magical about that. It's like a guy who's got a bunch of shit all over him, and he's like playing every instrument. He's playing like, you know what I mean? It's like another like niche skill or talent, but
yeah. Well, it's like, I mean, Tom Savini would, the special effects makeup artist for, you know, Friday the 13th, Dawn of the Dead, tons of horror movies. You know, he would always talk about when making effects for the screen, like, what do they need to see? Like, what do you need to see to sell this effect? And I think it takes that kind of forward imagination and creativity where it blows my mind for somebody to be thinking ahead. This is going to happen. What's going to sell that? Like, what is really going to make this an immersive experience? And if you, I don't know, have you ever heard of Fire Sign Theater, Nick Danger, Private Eye?
That sounds familiar.
They have a live video of them doing, and it's you know, a comedy thing. It's really funny, but they have a video of the guys performing it live, and they have a dude doing all the sounds, doing some voices in there as well, and it's exactly like you're talking about. It's so impressive to see that dude just running around back there sweating while making this all happen. No,
dude, seriously, that's hang on, let me see if I can find a picture. Radio drama Foley SFX. Here you go. This is
yep.
Dude, it's just, and at least from the show that I saw, he was going crazy. That guy legitimately was sweating after every single rehearsal and performance. Because, you know, he's running over here, making this noise. He's running over here, then making this noise. Running over here, running over there.
And they'll kind of make their own boxes, right? And adjust them. Like, you don't just buy a sound making box.
So this is what's interesting. Like, it's like a world within a world.
Yeah.
So, like, you start doing radio, it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be the sound effects asshole. But if you do enough radio, you really get into it, maybe you start helping out with the sound effects, and then all of a sudden you bring in a box of sound effects, and then all of a sudden that box turns into a cart, and then all of a sudden all this stuff is staying here, and it's just like, it was a thing of the guys that did this. That's what would happen. And you see, he's got everything. He's got a door. Somebody walks in and out of the door. He opens and closes that door. He's got a gun in his hand for whatever gun kind of sounds, probably rigged with a cap, you know? But every one of the guys, it's like a niche thing. How many people, of the people that did radio broadcasts, what percentage of those were the sound effects people? It's like, that's probably a very small number, but all of them kind of evolve in the same way. To the point where they're like, I don't know. It's like a, it reminded me when I was watching it happen, like a guy playing an organ where he was like pulling all the pipes and like running over here and then pulling this pipe and then pulling that. I don't know. It's very much, it's comparable to playing an instrument, but the instrument is the sound effects. It's very funny. Very funny.
Yeah. And that's also like, you have to really read and know a script and just like, I think when anybody like, even, I mean, I think like even like knowing it as a director, you know, I mean, sure, you have to know all the steps, everything that's going to happen in the story, you know, the way that lines should be delivered. But that's just like a whole nother, just this subtext that if you do it right, can really add a lot to it. But, you know, it's like, it doesn't, it's so weird. It's just like, I mean, that's why like production designers, like William Stout just amaze me, because they just have all of this foresight into what will, you know, look like there's a world beyond that set window, you know, even if it's just a dim light, you know, shining in or things like that, where it's always making it seem more expansive than it is.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, and radio audio only is a tricky one. That I guess that's kind of like the bigger point, is like the video component makes shit really easy to sell. The audio yeah. is what makes it tough. And when it was audio only, like it's incredible what they were able, and live, yeah. just broadcasting to millions of people in the dense population centers. They did this shit and it was as flawless as it was. I mean, you definitely can hear some fuck ups, but that's just the nature of doing anything live.
Which it's also kind of an ironic and mind blowing thing about it too, that so much of it was done live, and it was rare that there were that many fuck ups. Cause I would just think, if I was in that and I was just like, number one, this is going to broadcast twice in the next 5-10 years. Like, I'm not going to hear it.
Yeah. Fuck right.
like how bad could it be? Yeah, right. but yeah, it just seemed like they were really just, you know, really just going all in like every time.
Yeah. It's like, I don't know, the everything back then, I feel life in general, just the stakes were higher. And the cream would rise to the top, you know, like if you fucked up on air, you probably never got work again. You know? And the people that kept getting work didn't fuck up. They didn't ever fuck up. They were just always on top of their shit because they knew how savage that shit was. And yeah. But what's funny is like, it's savage, but not as savage. Like there's an interesting component to video visual media that you know, like on the radio you can have a face made for radio. on TV or a movie you can't. You have to look a certain way.
Yeah.
But on radio, I don't know, that to me is the power of audio. It's the power of sound effects, the power of really clever sound design. Like, you know, a guy can be voicing the voice of a woman and you wouldn't even know. They're like, he's fucking selling it. Or a woman is doing a man's voice and just fucking nailing it. Yeah. I don't know, the power and range and it's just interesting. It's such a strange lost art. But I kind of, like I was saying before, it's not totally lost. It's just now changed to podcasts. I used to do a lot of it. And it's not to say that people don't listen to it, but that it's also heavily produced. It's not live.
Right.
You know, the sound effects it's heavily produced. There's music at it. It's a much more involved.
It's layered in channels. It's not
seriously, you know. It's not occurring live, you know, and I'm sure Audible or one of the creators of audio drama content, they've probably been able to capture the few people that are still doing live radio style broadcasts like this and document it. But Yeah. It is a dying art. That's at that public radio station. That's what we were doing. We were documenting it because it's a dying art.
Yeah. And it's,
that was their explicit purpose. They're like, this guy, he's one of the only people that knows how to do this still. We need to get a recording of him doing it, please.
Yeah, for sure. And it's also really cool that whenever you look back just into the history of that, you see like so many actors that you'll see, you'll be like, oh, this person was an actor, a writer, a director, like all of these things. And like you were saying, like when the visual's off, like when the camera's not there, and you know, you're doing this all live, like you're not doing your line. There's a job to do. Like, I mean, people just like were cross training and jumping in all the time. And I think that made it just even more of a Wild West, you know, thing that somebody could come in and just be like, oh, I'm an extra doing a voice actor. And then all of a sudden, boom, they're producing a show 5 years from now.
Yeah.
And there was one of the dudes who, I think it was the guy who was the main writer for Murder by Experts. That's CBS actually had a training workshop program at the time. And wow. And he was just giving tours at the Los Angeles studio and just boom, hey, there's a training workshop program. You want to learn voice acting? You want to learn directing, writing? He went through it, got shipped off to World War II, came back and started producing and directing shows within like 2 or 3 years.
Wow. Yeah, no, really. It's so interesting that's and that at that time, that would have been an A-list career in media.
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
It's fucking crazy how different it was. It was a simpler time. It was a simpler time. Yeah.
That's right. Real Mad Men territory.
But you know, I guess they're also kind of going back to the beginning of the conversation, that I want to know the dirt. There's got to be some dirt. There's got to be some Mad Men level dirt involved in. There's got to be some history. I'm sure fucking Mr. Wells, I'm sure there's stories about him. Somebody has had to have told some stories about him.
I mean, I know he's done all kinds of wild, you know, shit. I mean, he used to use like the ambulances as like a taxi service back in the day until they were like, Orson, you really can't do that anymore. Like, people are dying, man. Like, stop. You're giving them heart attacks from the radio and then you're tying up the ambulance to get to your meeting. That's absolutely ridiculous. But I mean, you know, outside of like, it seems like the main things now, I mean, there's always instances of somebody who's a producer, a director, you know, Hyman Brown, prime example, who, you know, passed away, and he has an archive of all of his works in the CUNY TV in New York, and it's his granddaughter Melina Brown has access to it, and I believe it's pretty much just used for, you know, educational purposes. Somebody's writing an episode guide for it right now and things like that. Cool. But yeah, but they have like everything there, and they eventually want to do a kind of a podcast. It's like history of Hyman Brown, life and times of him, and some of his like unheard radio shows that they have there. But there's still part of it that I guess to actually use that and broadcast it is still held up in legal issues. So if anything, a lot of that is the fallout now. You know, it's just all these things are just held up in some sort of legal limbo, and even then, a lot of the times the case is that we have copies of all of, we have like bad quality copies of all the shows. We just want the good ones, and I can live with bad quality copies. It's okay. It's got a charm to it. I like it. So
well, and you know, like, dude, we've gotten so used to things looking and sounding so pristine. There was a period of time, especially when we were younger, where music, the singer's voice wasn't auto-tuned. There was a bad edit in that movie. Like that wasn't that long ago. Like, we've gotten used to the idea of things having to be this pristine, crystal clear. But shit wasn't like that until super recently. I don't know. It's never bothered me, especially if it's like a recording from 1930 survived and I can hear it now. Like, I'll take whatever quality I can get. I'm not going to complain about. Yeah, the shit that was recorded with a needle onto wax.
Exactly.
100 years ago.
Exactly. It's like you take what you can get. It's a really cool thing to have access to. And I'd said it on my channel before, but it's like having those older quality recordings, it's almost like borrowing a well-read book from somebody. You know,
yeah, no, sure.
Yeah. Somebody recorded this in their living room. You're hearing all of the commercials that were playing at that time, the news that was going on. And it's just really interesting. It's like you get a show, but then there's also this like snapshot of the place and time. You know, there's the show itself, the time period that that person was listening to it, and then there you are on your couch thinking too much about radio plays.
Yeah,
falling down a rabbit hole.
You told yourself you'd never get here, and look at you.
It's good, yeah. Lord. Let me out, Jesus. Let me out.
it's funny. Like, you bring up a good point. I know we talked about it on the other one too. I think it's worth bringing up again. We were talking about how when you used to go to like a movie, and especially during the wartime, you'd get propagandized. There'd be like war shit. You'd go to see a little cartoon as a kid, and in the middle, there's like brutal video of people dying in the most hardcore ways in World War II.
Yeah, yeah.
Do your part. Don't conserve your goods. Don't use tin. Donate your money now to the government. We need to win this fight for the boys overseas. You know what I mean? Like 1940s radio.
I know. And it was amazing because they would just like, it was like a teenager trying to buy condoms, but they're embarrassed about it, where there's just like a flashlight, a plunger, you know, like a jar of pickles, and then that. Because it's just this whole mixed bag of shit that they're trying to sneak under the radar. But, oh my God, again, I just goldfished so hard. It was because I was talking about plungers and.
Well, it's like the equivalent is on the radio. Like you hear the show. Like we can go watch a show. We can go watch Twilight Zone, but we're not getting the full experience. Like part of watching the Twilight Zone is watching the doctor come on and be like, "I suggest you smoke Lucky Strikes, number one doctor recommended cigarette." Now here's the Twilight Zone. You know what I mean? Like you miss that, and then all of a sudden the Twilight Zone has a whole different layer. Because everyone's smoking. It's just, I don't know. There's like a context that we don't get when I see what you're saying. When we're just watching the media.
They're sneaking it into you, and we're talking.
It's not the same as if you were sitting there listening to it while it was happening, you know?
Right. But, you know, they're going to sneak in that propaganda to you. They're going to make you watch the news. You're going to get your ice cream, but you're eating your broccoli. That's what's happening today at the theater. You know?
It's getting crammed in there. It's getting crammed in there for sure. I really love that the documentation that does exist of this does exist, and I know for a fact that this has been kind of a concerted effort, but all the major broadcasters are definitely rethinking. Archive in terms of, like, you know, we used to put everything on magnetic tape and that has a shelf life. We used to put everything on discs and that has a shelf life. And if we don't digitize it before a certain point, I just hope that of all the warehouses where recordings of these and the actual records of these.
Like, what's a shelf life on Glass Masters, you know, that sort of thing. We've come a long way since the Hollywood burn days, though, where they were just setting reels of films.
We need more room on the shelf. Burn all this old film. Yeah.
Incredible. But I don't know, though. I'm always interested to see like what state that those materials are in after. I mean, I know that like scripts are digitized and all that, and I mean, I'm sure they digitize the audio and everything, but I wonder, like, the physical copies, how they keep that. Like, it's, I don't know, just curious.
It is. I mean, and you know, depending on, you got to think about it, like, if they were smart about starting to archive stuff whenever they did, that, you know, at some point was probably around the time of magnetic tape. So the wax cylinders were converted to fucking, you know, magnetic tape in whatever ones could be converted to magnetic tape. but that magnetic tape has a shelf life, and it wasn't until recently that a lot of these companies were thinking in terms of like actual longevity, like not how's it going to last a decade, how's it going to last 500 years. That's the terms that a lot of these companies are thinking of this shit now. That just wasn't the case back then.
We want a future civilization to find Roadhouse.
Like that, society won't be society if that's not a part of the lexicon. Like if we're just referring to Roadhouse in the lore of humanity, no.
Yeah. Do you even know what it is?
That's a humanity that doesn't need to exist.
I don't want to live in a world.
We could do something about this right now, you know?
Yeah. People need to know that Patrick Swayze ripped a throat out.
We'll just need to chisel it on stone or something. I don't know. The man's a treasure. He was in Donnie Darko. Come on. He's great.
He was. He's amazing.
He's great. But, I for me, it's just like, I really hope that of the records of these things that do exist that are not digitized in some kind of like serious form of longevitous storage, I hope they get on it because the shit just disintegrates. Magnetic tape disintegrates. Wax melts.
Yeah.
You know, it would just be crazy to think that there would be a portion of the history of something that was so popular that we could only look at in pictures, you know?
Yeah. Right.
But well, anyways, you know, we've gone down this long tirade. I want to give the last couple minutes to you to kind of give your pages a shout out, and kind of have, if there's any insight or experience that you want to share with these people surrounding your love of radio shows, let's hear it. Let's hear it, man.
I don't know. Just search for me on TikTok and on YouTube. It's my name, Nick Sessions. It's down there. I'll give James the links so he can put them there for you.
In the descriptions, yep.
Yeah, but you know, if you like it, if you listen to the parts where I was rambling and you said this is sort of interesting, then definitely come over and check it out. I'm trying to have show suggestions as well as episode suggestions, and also giving history about different writers, directors, actors involved, and hopefully at some point giving some more connections to other, you know, popular media, like horror movies where you might recognize some of the players from and that sort of thing. Things that are in more of the public eye of media. But I would love it if you'd come over and check it out. And also, thank you so much to James for being a huge just personal supporter of me doing that. And I appreciate all your help and getting set up too, man. Thank you so much. And everything you're doing here is great. I appreciate you having me on.
No, dude, for sure. I was stoked to see you doing it, and definitely stoked to help support. I want to say for the next episode, I really want to hear about a scandal. I want to hear about a scandal that rocked radio. You know what I mean?
You want me to work on a radio scandal?
You know what I mean? Okay.
I'll see what I can figure out.
It's going to happen. Like the deeper you dig into this shit and the more information that you find about it, you're going to stumble across a thread. And when you do, like I want you to come back here and tell me about some juicy. Like it doesn't necessarily have to be like, you know, a radio show was hijacked for propaganda, that kind of crazy. It can just be like, these people were in a love triangle and it made for this incredibly awkward scenario that culminated in this or that. I don't know. It's going to exist there. It's got to exist.
It's there. It's there. It's probably got something to do with Cape Cod Mystery Theater and the level
maybe
of salt and chips.
They were pretty salty.
Now they're not.
Salty crew. Oh,
we're halfway there.
Yeah, seriously. I am really excited because I know you're going to dig to the point at which you start coming across a whole different layer of the onion. And I want to know about that really stinky, juicy layer of the onion.
First call, man. You got it.
Fucking hell yeah. All right. Stay on after. We'll reconvene here. Thank you, everybody. This has been the TLB Pod. We'll catch you on the next one.
This has been the Totally Legitimate Business Podcast. The end.
with your host, James Oliva.
Who?
Executive producers Clint G and James Oliva.
That's obnoxious.
Sound design, mix, and master by James Oliva.
Literally no one cares.
For more Totally Legitimate Business, subscribe to our YouTube channel at Totally Legitimate Business or add us on TikTok at TLB Pod.
When will this end?
Thank you for listening. Now get back to work.
Move it along, buddy.